Now, what follows is not exposition, but comment. I told you the difference between exposition and comment or criticism. Exposition is simply to state what is contended accurately. Comment is to make a judgment on what is said. Comment is a judgment on what is said. Now these judgments are normally of two kinds or three kinds. Judgments are of three kinds. A judgment can say this is true or false, or it is good or bad, or it is beautiful or ugly. All judgments, you look at the whole world, ultimately you find there are only three kinds of judgments in the world. When you make a comment, the comment will be only of three kinds. Either it is true or false, or good or bad, or beautiful or ugly. All other statements are only combinations of these three, or shades of these three. You can say this is partly true, partly false. Or you can say, oh, it is so-so. When you say it is so-so, what does it mean? It is partly good, partly bad, partly true, partly false, partly good, beautiful, partly ugly. So you say it is so-so. Now what follows is a comment. In this paragraph we are pointing out that what Plato has said is not absolutely satisfying. There is some limitation. Now a good judgment is one in which you not only make a comment on a judgment, you also give reasons for your judgment. If I say it is true or false, I should say why it is true. If I say it is false, I should say why it is false. If I say it is good, you should say why it is good. If I say it is bad, you should say why it is bad. Similarly, if you say it is beautiful, you should say why it is beautiful and why it is not beautiful. That's called a good comment. It is also called a learned comment, a comment which you have made after learning, after studying. A studied comment, a comment after study. You don't merely make a comment just like that. So now we make a few comments. Now let us see these comments. Obviously one feels here the limitations of Plato's theory. You know, Plato is such a great philosopher that we small children making a comment that there are limitations in Plato's theory is to speak tall things with our small mouths. So we must be very humble while making statements about Plato. He's a very, very great philosopher. So if we say that there are limitations, we state this with great modesty. We should not claim that now we have gone beyond Plato, we can see from above Plato and we can say, oh, he is like this. It's not in that sense. We should not criticize such great philosophers in that sense. It is our fortune that after Plato 2000 years and more have passed. Therefore there have arisen so many other philosophers who have thought over Plato, and we are inheritors of all these. Therefore we have learned from so many others, and now we come back, although small in our age, we have a privilege of being the children of so many other philosophers. And therefore we have some kind of a possibility of commenting. Normally, a good education is one in which you should be allowed to comment only when you can make a better philosophy than the philosopher whom you are criticizing. You should be yourself greater than Plato to be able to criticize Plato. So when we make these comments, do not say that we are greater than Plato and therefore we are making comments. Some other great people have also made comments. We have learned from them and we are now able to reproduce them to some extent. And we also can think in that way because of the light thrown by so many others. Therefore, we are making these comments. So, as good students of philosophy, when you make a comment on Plato or on Aristotle or any great philosophers, we should be very modest. So let us, in that spirit I am now speaking, obviously one feels here the limitations of Plato's theory. A self-existent which is non-existent is self-contradiction. It's the first statement. A self-existent which is non-existent is self-contradiction. Now, has Plato said that there is something self-existent which is non-existent? If you read the previous sentence, you will find one sentence there. Read again. The original stuff of the particulars is self-existent and uncreated, but this self-existent is non-existent. This is how Plato says. The universals, of course, are permanent and self-existent. But particulars themselves are not self-existent. But the stuff of which particulars are made, that stuff, according to Plato, is self-existent but non-existent. It's a new kind of statement, actually. He conceives of an existent which is non-existent. Something that is not there but attains some kind of existence because of the imprint of the universal on it. But in itself, it must be something which is not there. It's a very strange statement. And that is why we say it is obvious a self-existent which is non-existent is self-contradiction. That which is self-contradictory is normally not true. That which is self-contradictory is normally not true. I am riding, not riding. If I make a statement, I am riding, not riding, you are making a nonsensical statement. It doesn't make any sense. When a statement is made and makes no sense, it is only called a noise. You are making a noise, but it has no meaning. A meaningless noise, abracadabra, this is also a word, it's only noise, it makes no meaning, abracadabra. So you can say, a self-contradiction is abracadabra. What does it mean? A noise which makes no meaning. So you can say, a self-existent which is non-existent is self-contradiction. A is both B and not B is a self-contradiction, therefore not true. A is not self-contradictory. But if A is A and not A at the same time, like I am riding, not riding, at the same time, is an impossibility. Therefore I say it is not true. Now, if thinkers like Plato surely must have thought this is a very easy thing, even a child can show. What are you talking? Self-existent which is non-existent. That it is a self-contradiction, obviously. But man like Plato has said it, in spite of the fact that he knew this law very well, non-contradiction. That if there is something self-contradictory, it is only senseless. Why was Plato led to say something of this kind? It's the mistake that you are pointing out, surely he must have known much better than you and I. That which is so obvious, but still he is obliged to make this kind of statement. Therefore, don't merely dismiss by saying, therefore Plato is wrong. You can say there is self-contradiction, something that is not understandable, something that is wrong, obviously, to our sense. But at the same time, in the corner of your mind, you must know that if Plato has made this kind of statement, there must be a strong reason for him to do so. So keep this idea behind while we go forward. So first criticism is, a self-existent which is non-existent is self-contradiction. It is inconceivable and therefore something that cannot be. Now we argue, as I said, every comment should be given a reason. If you have a good comment, you should give a reason. So now we are giving some kind of further reason. If it is really non-existent, what is it that partakes of the ideas? If it is really non-existent, then what is it that partakes of the ideas? Not the particulars, because particulars are the results. When this matter, which he says does not exist and yet exists, that is now presented to the universal ideas are printed, then only particulars are produced. So this stuff cannot be particulars. It is not universals, because universals are really being. They are not existent, non-existent. They are permanent, they are real. So what is it really partakes of these ideas? And can the non-existent ever attain to being? Plato says that this matter, the stuff on which universals are imprinted, is a non-being which attains to being when universals imprint themselves on that stuff. So our question is, can non-existent ever attain the state of being? That which is not, can it ever be? There is a very famous sentence in Indian philosophy. It is stated in the Bhagavad Gita. It is worth stating that statement and keep it in your mind. In Sanskrit it is Nasato Vidyate Bhavo Nabhavo Vidyate Sataha. Now you don't know Sanskrit, so I will not press upon it. I'll only tell you the translation of it. It says, of non-existence there can be no existence. Of non-existence there can be no existence. Of existence there can be no non-existence. Of existence there can be no non-existence. So according to the Gita, that which is non-existent can never attain to existence. That which really exists can never cease to be. That which exists, exists. It cannot then afterwards perish. Existence cannot become non-existence. Non-existence cannot become existence. But here Plato says, matter is non-existent, but when ideas imprint themselves on it, then matter attains some kind of being. So our question is, can the non-existent ever attain to being? Plato would say that perhaps it cannot, and it does not. And therefore he says, it is neither being nor non-being. He has made two statements. Matter is neither being nor non-being, or it is being non-being. And there's a difference between the two statements. Matter is neither being nor non-being, or matter is being non-being. His ultimate conclusion is that it is not the object of knowledge, because knowledge can be only of that which is always there, which is permanent, which can be conceived.